What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, and the Fantasy Viper, Graham Barfield. Fabs, welcome back, man. It's good to see you.
If the virus that took over my body for like the last week and a half was the San Francisco 49ers, and clearly I was the Green Bay Packers because I got my ass kicked. I got my butt kicked by this thing. The doctors didn't know what it was. It wasn't the flu. It wasn't mono. It wasn't strep throat. It was just some virus, man. And I had like 104 fever for like 3 days. Fever was over 102 for a week straight.
Wow.
Yeah, dude.
Sounds like pain.
It was brutal, man.
Sounds like
pain. It was literally, and this is gross, but I literally went through at least two shirts a night.
Oof.
Because I was just sweating through everything. It was brutal.
You just put a fan on you or something?
No, it didn't matter. Because like 2 seconds later, I was freezing my butt off.
Wow.
It was one of those. It was brutal, man.
Yeah. Well,
and then Matthew got sick. So, but yeah, I'm back.
Welcome back, man.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be back among the living.
Yeah. We got plenty to talk about on today's show. Some news and notes we'll get through. The big one, though, we'll debate Eli Manning because, I mean, why not? Also, since Fabs is back, he just recently put out his top 200 for Dynasty Leagues. So we'll get through some of that as well. Just after perusing through it, some questions I had, and we're going to force you to account for yourself.
Sounds good.
What you did with your list. Plus, some thoughts just on Kobe Bryant, because that was obviously the biggest story of the weekend. So we'll kind of get to that a little bit later in the show as well. Before we do that, though, of course, we'll go behind the glass, talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. Murph, what's up?
First of all, I'd just like to say, obviously, Fabs, great to see you back here. And guys, now we are in Super Bowl week, which is crazy. It flew by so fast.
Right.
But the best thing about this week, at least for me and Marcus, you will not agree with this because I'm sure you're very nervous because your Niners are playing. But for me, no Eagles, no Patriots, no rival. Chiefs win. Great. Great story for Mahomes in the offensive juggernaut. Andy Reid, great story there. 49ers win. It's the Jimmy G trade. Great defense. You know, Kyle Shanahan, the team John Lynch built, great story there. I could sit back, relax, enjoy either win. There's no pressure. I'm not going to be mad one way or the other. It is a great feeling to be in the Super Bowl week.
You know, I'll tell you this. At least as of right now on this Monday, I'm very calm.
Nice. Right?
I feel very calm. Now, you know, probably when we get to Sunday, I'm the kind of person who doesn't really get nervous until like right
That's
as
good.
The thing is happening.
Very good.
I think I told Graham this even leading up to the NFC Championship game. Like, I felt like they're sort of playing with house money, right? Like, nobody expected 13-3 and them to be playing for a Super Bowl. So in a lot of ways, even if they had lost in the championship game, I would have been disappointed, but not heartbroken. But I do imagine when we get to Sunday, I'll probably be a bundle of nerves.
I will say, you are like in the 1% of fans that you just don't really get disturbed. Like, you're just even, and you don't really go up and down.
It's a great quality.
It is jealous.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah,
I think, well, it depends. Like, you know, with the Dodgers, I'm sort of more up and down. When USC is good, I'm more up and down. I think part of it is that when I started working here, the Niners weren't very good. And I sort of made the decision to kind of emotionally divorce myself from it because I'm like, if I can't be here every Sunday and be upset when they lose, it's just not going to be productive. And so I think that has sort of helped a little bit. So
that's the right outlook.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm sure, like I said, by the time we get to Sunday, I'll feel a little bit.
But clearly, you know, you were a Niners fan for the Steve Young Super Bowl against San Diego.
Yep.
Now, when did you start? I mean, were you a fan of, you know, Joe Cool?
I was growing up as a kid. I mean, so when the Raiders left Oakland the first time, I was, I think, 4 years old. I was pretty young when they left the first time. And so the Niners were the only, you know, NFL team we had up there. And, you know, at that time, I mean, they won the Super Bowl after the 81 season, January of 82.
Mm-hmm. No.
So for most of my childhood, the 49ers were good. I mean,
we
had Joe Montana and Jerry Rice and then transitioned to Steve Young. So, yeah, it was...
I hated the Niners.
I'm sure you did.
Oh,
I'm sure you did. But, as a kid, it was easy for me to be a 49er fan because they were playing good football and the Raiders were in Los Angeles. So,
You were growing up during the heyday.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there were very few teams that were better than the Niners during that stretch.
Yeah, the catch, that was my first heartbreaking moment as a sports fan.
Yeah. So, I go way back with the 49ers. So, this has been interesting. It'll be a really, really fun Sunday, I think. So, all right, let's do some news. All
Through the news.
We will start in New Orleans. Mickey Loomis, the general manager of the Saints, says there is nothing different. They want Drew Brees to come back next season as their quarterback. Drew Brees himself has said if he comes back for the 2020 season, it will be with the New Orleans Saints. Look, it was a very good year for Brees, both on the field, certainly fantasy-wise. He did miss some time, obviously, with an injury, but when he was on the field, he was fantastic as always. Fabs, we'll get to your Dynasty Top 200 a little bit later on in the show. But, I mean, if Drew Brees comes back, I would imagine he is potentially a top 10 quarterback drafted in most leagues.
Yeah, I'd say back of the top 10. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that he finished. I mean, he had like one of the greatest finishes ever for a quarterback in terms of points. I think it was 91 fantasy points during the 3-week stretch of the fantasy playoffs. I think it was the most ever by a quarterback. So, I mean, he still showed that despite his extended age that he could still get it done. I still have question marks about him, you know, when he's on the road in outdoor games. We've seen that kind of thing where he struggled, but I mean, he's got Michael Thomas, Traquan's had another season in the league, and he's still got a lot of offensive talent. Maybe they add somebody through the draft or in the offseason through free agency. So if Brees is back, Not top five Brees, but I would say probably 9 or 10.
Yeah, well, Brees this past year, when he was active, he finished the year tied as the QB5 with Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes. Now, granted, Mahomes had a game in there, too, where he got hurt. So did Drew Brees. So maybe they were a little bit higher. But when Brees was out there, like you mentioned, Marcus, he was still fantastic.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. I mean, look, if for whatever reason he doesn't come back, I guess that puts Teddy Bridgewater
right
there top of the list. Taysom Hill maybe gets some quarterback snaps.
I know, that was the thing. When Brees originally got hurt, I thought Taysom Hill and Bridgewater would kind of share.
Right.
It was mainly just Teddy back
there.
It
was mostly Bridgewater.
5-0 without Brees, and it worked.
Taysom has been more of the Swiss Army knife,
doing
a little bit of everything there for Sean Payton.
Yep.
Further south in Miami, the Dolphins front office, they say they fully expect Ryan Fitzpatrick to be back in 2020. Now, also, they're also saying that they have enough ammo to move up in the draft if they want to. The obvious speculation there being that if they move up, it is to go get Tua Tagovailoa coming out of Alabama. Graham, we sort of joked about it. Fitzpatrick was the leading rusher for the Dolphins this past season, but he played well enough. Does anything change if it's, in terms of the skill position players you're drafting, if it is Fitzpatrick versus, say, Tua next year?
It only makes sense for them to bring back Fitz. After this past year, he played, played really well for them. Got Devontae Parker a fat new contract. And, of course the Dolphins have enough picks to go get Tua. I mean, they have two first-rounders. They've got two second-rounders. They've got a bunch of threes, too. I mean, they've got a lot of juice to get after it, and it would be a perfect kind of situation for them to move up, go get Tua, and have this kind of nice little, it's crazy to say, but the Dolphins would have a good quarterback stable if they have both Tua and Fitz.
Let me ask you guys a question here, because I'm going to throw a few stats at you here. Fitzpatrick opens the season as the starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, okay? Since 2018, he's averaged more fantasy points than Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen, Carson Wentz, and Kirk Cousins, okay?
Wow.
From weeks 9 to 17 this past season, Christian McCaffrey, Lamar Jackson, Michael Thomas were the top three scoring fantasy players. The fourth was Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Tannehill took over as the Titans' starting quarterback in week 7. Over those final 10 games, the only quarterbacks to score more fantasy points were Lamar Jackson and Ryan Fitzpatrick. So if Fitzpatrick is the starting quarterback for the Dolphins next season, and you're out there in the late round pick, Tom Brady's out there, Kirk Cousins is out there, Ryan Fitzpatrick's out there, who are you going with?
Leading rusher, Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, really.
Isn't it crazy? But, I mean, he's been really good.
Yeah.
People forget the games that he started for Tampa Bay, because it was Fitzpatrick two seasons ago, and then Jameis came in. If you combine their fantasy points, they were one of the top three quarterbacks in fantasy football. Fitzpatrick's been really, really good since 2018 when he's played.
So I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is one of the coolest case studies ever of why we need to split fantasy football from real life. Ryan Fitzpatrick is just throwing DGAF balls down the field and competing on every single play and scrambling and putting his head down. Most quarterbacks are not playing in that, in terms of that, with that play style.
He literally plays like every snap could be his last.
Yeah.
He really
yeah.
does.
I mean, that's why he and Jameis were so perfect together in 2018. They were basically the same guy. They just throw YOLO balls and try to make things happen. It was great. But it's the antithesis of Aaron Rodgers at this point. Rodgers is just he's a really good game manager with a fantastic arm, whereas Fitz.
Imagine that statement just came out of Graham's mouth.
I mean, yeah, it's hard to argue.
I mean,
yeah.
It is. I know. But Fitzpatrick's he's a draftable asset if he's a starter for the Dolphins.
Absolutely. He absolutely is.
At what? It'd be 38.
It'll be interesting to see how Tua's health progresses, because I think everybody expected him to kind of miss 2020 and sit it out. But it sort of sounds like he's going to be pretty close to health by the time training camp rolls around, when whomever drafts him.
Yeah. Also, side note. This is the end for Josh Rosen, right? It's over.
Oh, no.
He's got to go someplace and be a backup.
it's over.
And yeah, I feel bad for that dude.
Yeah.
Marcus, is it time for us to give up our truth or status?
It is. Yeah. It is. You know, I hung on for a while, but at this point, one, the opportunity isn't coming anytime soon. And, you know, in the past, when the opportunity was there, he just didn't really do anything with
it. Right now, too, I mean, outside of maybe, what, Chicago? Who's going to trade for him?
No, I don't think anybody really
will.
So, yeah, I think that dream is over. So, in Washington, Case Keenum, speaking of truthers, I guess he's no longer a Case Keenum truther, apparently. He has said it's Dwayne Haskins' team moving forward. Obviously, what we saw of him this past year, Fabs, Haskins needs some work. We'll see what he does in the offseason to sort of progress. Mm-hmm. But look, Terry McLaurin was having a great start to the year. His value sort of sunk when Haskins came in and
got
took
better
over.
Though towards the end.
It did. It did.
Got better.
I mean, what are your expectations, your thoughts on if Haskins really truly is the starter next year?
Yeah, he's going to be. I mean, there's no question about that. Unless the Redskins do something crazy in the draft, you know, in a couple of months. But I would think Haskins would be the guy. He's not going to be drafted in fantasy leagues, but I do. At least there was a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel, because when Keenum was the quarterback, McLaurin was tremendous, and then Haskins came in and McLaurin disappeared. He was dropped in some leagues, but again, towards the end of the season, started to click, and these guys clearly have a rapport together. They played together at Ohio State, so I think I like McLaurin. How many times in the last decade have we seen wide receivers really bust out like in that second season?
Right.
McLaurin could end up being that guy, and I mean, this is going to be a complete offseason, mini camps, training camps, where Haskins is going to be the guy. He's going to be taking the first team reps throughout, and he gained some valuable experience as a starting quarterback. Some of it didn't look very great, but I feel like McLaurin is still going to be one of those guys who could potentially be a breakout candidate in 2020.
Yeah, I think yeah, he's going to be interesting to watch, and. Just curious to see how Dwayne Haskins progresses, and I think that's going to have a lot to do with this offense. So
Redskins got to wrap him with some toys there, though.
They do.
Hopefully Darius is going to be good in that backfield, but they need to give him some toys.
Yeah, Terry McLaurin's coming off, I mean, just a really great season. I mean, over the last 30 years, McLaurin is fourth in receiving yards for any receiver drafted in the third round or later. Cooper Kupp, T.Y. Hilton are in the top six, like Marcus Colston, Keenan Allen, guys up there too. I mean, McLaurin's coming off a historic season. I mean, I think we're about to talk dynasty, but if you want to buy on McLaurin, now is the time to do it, because his value could skyrocket after the 2020 season.
Yeah, no doubt. So, all right, there you go. That's pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
All right, so the one headline that I did not include in our news section, because I wanted to save it for here, was the thing that happened on Friday in the NFL, where Eli Manning made it official. He announced his retirement from professional football after 16 seasons, which immediately launched the conversation about whether or not Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer. Now, there right now seem to be two camps about this. That he, you know, was a guy who during the regular season was just kind of okay, and that shouldn't be enough to get him in. The other side saying, well, look, he had two amazing playoff runs. He won two Super Bowls. Not only did he win two Super Bowls, but he beat Tom Brady and the Patriots in both of those Super Bowls, won some MVPs, won Super Bowl MVPs, and that alone should be enough. That you can't tell the story of the NFL without the Patriots. You can't tell the story of the Patriots without Eli Manning, and that should be enough. That debate is going to go on for the next 5 years, probably even beyond that, whatever happens with Eli Manning's Hall of Fame status. But I always like to ask the question, a little more, you know, focused because we're a fantasy football podcast. So when it comes to Eli Manning and fantasy football, the postseason has nothing to do with it. What Eli does, you know, in January and beyond has nothing to do with his fantasy stats because we are done playing. So the question is Eli Manning a fantasy football Hall of Famer? Does he go in our fantasy ring of honor?
I say no. Just because, I mean, there weren't enough top level finishes. I mean, he was obviously a great compiler, had fantastic longevity. I know that's definitely criteria for a lot of Hall of Fame voters. I don't know if it should be, but I don't see it. I will say, though, Eli supported a bunch of really good receivers in his time with the Giants.
Right.
Over his entire starting career, Eli supported 16 top 20 fantasy receivers, and a bunch of those were like top 10 guys. I mean, granted, he had a bunch of talent around him, even dating back well before Odell Beckham, like Victor Cruz, Mario Manningham, Plaxico Burress. All of those guys were really top in fantasy talent. So I don't think Eli's in the fantasy Hall of Fame, but he's definitely helped get, you know, good receivers, good fantasy seasons.
Yeah, what's funny is that his highest finish as a fantasy quarterback was fifth.
Yes.
Wow.
2005.
And he only had 224 fantasy points. Like, that was and we're talking about a different era, too. I mean, but you want to look at the top quarterback was Carson Palmer that he had 265 points. You know, now we're talking about Mahomes and
400 points
and Lamar Jackson going over 400. So it's clearly different. But you're looking at a top 10 that had Trent Green in it and Jake Plummer in it and Kerry Collins in it. So, I mean, Eli was fine, but Hall of Famer?
Man. So that in his QB5 season in 2005, he threw 17
picks.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's just, I mean, 24 touchdowns and 17 picks. You'd be like the QB22 right now.
Yeah.
During this era.
I know. I mean, obviously, I didn't even break 3,800 passing yards that year either. So,
yeah. I mean, so
different time.
In his career, six top 10 finishes. As Faz mentioned, the QB5 in 2005. He was QB6 in 2011, three seasons with 30 plus touchdowns.
That was an awful season for quarterbacks. Oh, my God. Favre was 15th. And you remember, Favre had some seasons where he wasn't very good. And he had 16 starts that season. McNair had 14 starts, and he was 14th. Mark Brunell was 13th. I mean, this is hell. Drew Brees. I'm sorry. Drew Brees was 9th. Drew Bledsoe was 11th.
Was it 2005 Favre's Jameis year?
For the Cowboys.
That's the year he went the.
Favre had 29 picks.
Yeah.
29.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Jameis said, hold my beer. In 2019.
I mean, Jameis did it in the most spectacular fashion. A pick six.
His season had to end that way. It had to end in a pick six to close out the game.
Yeah, that was the most spectacular way.
Eddie, I mean, let's get your thoughts on here. I mean, I know you're a young man. I don't know if Eli Manning was ever on any of your fantasy football teams back in the day. But, I mean, even being the homer that you are, he's not a Hall of Famer.
I don't think I'm a homer, but no, I don't.
You're a homer.
Fantasy, like, Eli is a fantasy Hall of Fame, I would not agree with that.
Yeah.
And the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, that's a different story. Obviously, I think he is for a number of reasons. But no, I mean, he was never like my – if you're starting Eli outside of maybe, 2011 and maybe a few other spots, it probably either meant the rest of your team was stacked and took a quarterback in the last round, or you were just – your quarterback was on a bye or injured or something because you probably don't want to start Eli.
So I probably have to look this up, though. I remember I was listening to Mad Dog on Sirius XM, and I'm pretty sure there was a question, how many postseason wins did Eli Manning have in his non-Super Bowl seasons?
Zero.
None.
Yeah.
So either he went all the way or he went nowhere. Right?
No, right.
Wow.
Yeah, none. Yeah. Didn't have any.
I never realized that.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Wow, that is kind of crazy.
Yeah, first round loss to the Panthers, first round loss to the Packers. The other ones
2015, they had a first round.
I remember that Packers game. That was in Green Bay.
Green Bay, yeah. That was like Odell dropped a few balls. McAdoo's first season as head coach. He brought him to the playoffs. I know they lost. They got blown up by the Panthers, I think.
Not only did he. Yeah, I mean, they were bounced every single time except for 2011 and 2007. That's just absurd.
Yeah.
He played really poorly in all of their losses, too. So it was basically like if Eli got hot, like they were going to
watch. Watch out!
Yeah.
Watch
Eli
out.
Got hot. Watch out! Yep. Yeah,
if he got hot. It was four straight wins. If he wasn't, then yeah, it was a problem.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was easy. All right, so that moves us on to the Dynasty Top 200 list. Fabs, you just posted yours, Friday, I believe it was.
Yeah, that was like towards the end of my my sickness. And I'm like, you know what? I got to do something. I'm itching to do something. I'm tired of sweating and sitting in bed doing freaking nothing. So I was like, yeah, let me put this little thing together.
Yeah, so I went through, and you guys can find it, NFL.com/Fabiano. You can go and find it there. So I went through and picked out, first off, the top five at each position in your top 200, mm-hmm. And then just some questions about each of them. So we'll start the quarterbacks, which, you know, why not? The quarterbacks, no major surprises here, I think, in the top five. Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Kyler Murray, and Russell Wilson.
I figured you'd be surprised at where I have Lamar Jackson. Like, I have him
not
20,
really.
I have him 26th, and you know me with quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, overall 26th. I mean, no, because yeah. I know you, so I'm not really surprised about that at all.
Okay.
The one thing that surprised me, though, is like when it came to your list of quarterbacks, mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers at QB9.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just because is it about Aaron Rodgers, or is it just about the rest of the guys around him in that ranking?
I mean, he's, you know, he just turned 36.
Mm-hmm.
He averaged 17 points a game. He was the QB 16 in points per game among quarterbacks. And I mean, Graham said it, game manager. Like, right. I mean, nine might even be too high.
Yeah.
It might be
right. I think that's kind of what surprised me. I was like,
it might even be a little bit too high for Rodgers, but. He's coming off a bad season, and you know, I don't know that he's going to ever come back to being an elite fantasy quarterback. But the guys that I have ranked behind him, there could be end up being some movement as we go through the off season. But I felt like nine was fair for Rodgers at this point.
All right, the other one, Baker at 10, Jameis at 11. Are we hoping for a Baker?
It's
redemption.
I mean. He's 24. Winston's 26. Winston has 44 picks in his last 27 games.
Yeah.
And I feel like Winston, you know, is another three or four interceptions away from being a backup somewhere in the league. We didn't even know where he's going to play.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, would anybody be surprised if Winston started this season as the number one guy somewhere and four games into the year, backup? Like, I just feel like Baker is younger.
Mm-hmm.
He had a crappy year. I get it. You know, maybe things will be different under Stefanski. We'll see what happens. But he's got a lot of talent around him. And I guess I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt and feel like he could. Maybe that was as bad as it's going to get for Baker.
Right.
I do wonder, though, you know, with Stefanski and with the Browns, what they want to do is obviously come out and establish Nick Chubb and give him mm-hmm. like 350 carries.
Yep.
I do wonder if they're going to just take a page out of the Vikings playbook from last year and just really kind of make Baker Mayfield sort of a game manager, mm-hmm. run a ton of play action, mm-hmm. not have a ton of pass attempts. I do wonder.
I also felt like, too, Baker has more job security in that. I mean, number one overall pick, the Browns are not going to give up on him anytime soon. They have nothing behind him.
He does
at
have
the
more
position,
job security, for sure.
Whereas Jameis, you know, don't know where he's going to be in 2020.
Right.
Could end up back with Tampa Bay. We'll see what happens, but. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have Baker than Winston in Dynasty at this point.
Yeah, you know, it would be interesting. You mentioned the Stefanski angle, too, there. You know, if they basically turn Baker Mayfield into Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
You know, how that works out.
I think Baker could be a more accurate, slightly more mobile version of Kirk Cousins. Which could be good for fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick, where would you have Joe Burrow right now? Because I know you didn't include rookies.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, there are no rookies in this list.
Yeah, I mean... Boy, he'd certainly be ahead of Aaron Rodgers. He'd be ahead of Drew Brees. I mean, obviously, those are because of
right.
his age. Boy, I tell you, I got to look at the list right now. But I mean,
I think you would have him over Rodgers at QB 9.
Oh,
really? It's
no question about it.
Wentz or Josh Allen?
I like Josh Allen so much.
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
I like Josh Allen a lot, man.
And Carson Wentz feels so overdue for a huge fantasy season.
That's the neighborhood he's going
to
be in.
We just need the stars
to
align. We need Wentz to stay healthy, and we need his pieces around him to stay healthy for a season.
Eagles need a field stretcher. They need to call Robbie.
Well,
Anderson.
I mean, what Deshaun, I don't know what his contract situation
is
off the top of my head, but
yeah.
I mean, still a guy who had a whole heck of a lot of speed, just couldn't stay healthy this year. But that's where he'd end up being. Burrow would be
like
top 10, ahead of Rodgers, ahead of Breeze, you know, those guys.
Yeah. All right. Over to the running backs. They're your top five. Again, not really a lot of surprise. Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook. Is it injury that keeps Dalvin out of the top three? Is it just the potential?
Yeah,
for him
I
put
well. Look at the top three.
I mean, there's yeah. Look.
Yeah, I mean, like
that also.
Yeah, McCaffrey. Say, I wouldn't be surprised if Saquon's the number one running back in fantasy football in 2020 when all is said and done. And I mean, Zeke is just super durable and reliable, and he's going to give you 20 points a game. No matter what, and the Cowboys have McCarthy now, with Kellen Moore continuing to call the shots, and they're gonna just lean on Zeke. They're gonna continue to do that. Kamara and Cook, I feel like they're very close in value. I went with Kamara just because he's got a longer track record, and because like as good as Dalvin Cook is, and I mean five's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Every year he's gotten hurt.
Yeah,
I mean,
five is nothing to laugh about.
Every year he's gotten hurt. But the talent is clearly there, and we saw that this past season where he could end up being a top three running back, like without question.
Nick Chubb as your running back six. Does that change? Does he move up if Kareem Hunt isn't in Cleveland next year?
It could. Mm-hmm. It could potentially. I mean, when you look at the numbers, and we've talked about this on the podcast too. The targets and the receptions go down. If Nick Chubb is like the true featured back, what we saw in the games where he was the guy compared to when Kareem Hunt, I mean, there was a pretty big difference there. The touchdowns weren't there with Kareem Hunt as well. So he could, I could see myself moving him past Dalvin Cook mm-hmm. and potentially Alvin Kamara, but he wouldn't move into the top three for me.
Browns have an interesting call with Hunt because he's a restricted free agent.
Yeah.
They could bring him back before the deadline passes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they will though.
Well, and then he got a little bit of trouble here recently too. So I don't know. Looking at the numbers, if you go to my, I also posted my top 200 interesting fantasy facts from 2019. Chubb was the RB8. He averaged 6 fewer fantasy points and 20 fewer scrimmage yards per game with Kareem Hunt there, mm-hmm. and he also had just 2 touchdowns after Hunt returned from that suspension. He had 6 before that, so it's big, man. Like Nick Chubb is. Like, hell, he could end up being a top 5 overall pick in redrafts
for sure.
If Kareem Hunt's no longer in the mix there in Cleveland. That's a big question mark for fantasy fans.
Yeah, no doubt. It's no surprise, obviously, your list was very top-heavy with running backs. Not really a shock there. And I think, do we believe there are going to be more workhorse backs? I mean, the guy's always the top, right? I mean, McCaffrey, Barkley, Zeke, Kamara, Cook, mm-hmm. Chubb. These are all guys who are going to get the ball a ton. I know Josh Jacobs was sort of near the top of that list as well. I don't know. Is this just me being hopeful, wishful thinking that we're going to get more workhorse backs in 2020?
It could end up being that way, though, because if you think about it, so we're hoping – I mean, the Chargers are not keeping Melvin Gordon, right?
No.
So say Gordon ends up with the Bucs, for example, right? I mean, featured back. So the Tampa Bay goes from having a confusing backfield committee to – probably a featured back there, and that also opens up the featured role in Los Angeles for Austin Eckler, right? So that could be one of the one of the moves that is made during the offseason. And if Nick Chubb is the guy in Cleveland and Kareem Hunt goes somewhere else, I mean, boy, then you've got 2 potentially top 10 fantasy running backs. So you're right. And then with some of the guys coming in the class of 2020 that we're going to see here with the young kids starting off with the we saw Senior Bowl, NFL Combine coming up. Clearly,
right.
It's going to be here before you know it. So it could be a much deeper position, and it could be an easier position to navigate in terms of these backfield situations.
Right.
Yeah.
I do like where you have Eckler. You got him in your top 24. That's the right spot for him.
Yeah.
Because even if he's not back in L.A., somebody's going to pay him big money and mm-hmm. give him maybe not a workhorse role, but at least a featured role.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I was going back and forth between him and Jacobs, Josh Jacobs, who obviously showed that he could end up being a real fantasy asset for years and years to come. But age is what kept Jacobs ahead of Eckler. But Eckler could be a stud, man. Like,
yeah.
If you looked at and this is another thing that I posted in my stats. I'm going to look this up real quick. But if you looked at what Eckler had done before Gordon came back, he averaged almost 27 fantasy points per game. If you now, obviously, I don't know that he's going to do that over a full 16 games, but let's just go pie in the sky. That's 428 fantasy points. That would have been the 6th most fantasy points scored by any player in NFL history.
Wow.
So he's got it in him.
Right.
He's got it in him.
Wow. All right. Wide receivers, your top five, Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, Chris Godwin. Mm-hmm. Michael Thomas, number four overall. He's the first non-running back that you have in your rankings there. We talked a little bit about Drew Brees and him possibly coming back for 2020. No official decision made at this point. If he does retire, does Thomas move? Does he move at all? Does he move a lot, a little?
He was still pretty good with Bridgewater, man.
Yeah.
I don't know that he'd move, and if he did, it wouldn't be more than a spot or two down, you know, maybe below Nuke and Devontae, but he's a star. And, I mean, it's not like the Saints would be going from Drew Brees to, you know, I don't know, Case Keenum.
Right.
Teddy Bridgewater has shown that he could be a pretty damn good quarterback in the National Football League, and when he was the guy, he was still peppering Thomas with targets. So.
Yeah, I think Michael Thomas has proven that he's sort of like DeAndre Hopkins in the sense that he's quarterback proof. Like, I know it's been nice to get Hopkins with Deshaun Watson.
The only player in NFL history who has ever stopped Nuke Hopkins
is Brock Osweiler. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But everybody else, yes, he's been fine.
One of my favorite headlines of all time after a game was, I can't remember who wrote it. I think it was Houston Chronicle, but it was, "Bad BO stinks up Houston."
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. It was after a particularly bad BO game.
He got a lot of money, though.
He did.
Money,
he got paid a lot of scratch to suck.
Man.
Yeah.
I should have learned to be tall.
You and me
be
both,
tall
and
have a very strong arm. That's
right.
It.
I should have learned that. Man, somebody steered me wrong. Your wide receiver six.
I thought you liked this one.
Oh, no, I do. I'm just curious, right?
Yeah.
Juju Smith-Schuster, wide receiver six, 13 overall. I would assume a lot of this is because you're expecting Ben Roethlisberger to be back at quarterback.
I mean, it partially is. He's 22, you know, years old.
No, he's still very
23
young.
Years old. He's a
very
young guy.
Young.
Absolutely.
And, you know, not one thing went right for that Steelers offense.
It did not.
Nothing. Roethlisberger got hurt. Mason Rudolph was awful.
Mm-hmm.
And then Duck Hodges was it was a fun story, but let's be honest, guys.
Right.
I mean, Duck Hodges, he's not a starting quarterback in the National Football League. I'm sorry.
Right.
So
it doesn't help that Juju was banged up all year long.
You're right. He was hurt. He played 12 games. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, much like more than Baker. I mean, Baker is more age, and I feel like he has more job security. But, I mean, Juju is still going to be the number one guy in an offense that we presume will be led by Ben Roethlisberger, mm-hmm. who's still going to be able to throw that football around. And unless the Steelers' offense just, you know, has the worst luck in the world again, things should be better in Pittsburgh in 2020 with Roethlisberger at the helm. And, I mean, Juju's a young guy, dude, and he's a talented guy, and that's why I have him ranked so highly here, because I feel like you're still going to get, you know, seasons and seasons and seasons to come of pretty good production. And I would think that the Steelers now know that they don't have the quarterback of the future on their roster, and they're going to end up having to make some sort of move here to get that quarterback on their roster in the next year or two. So
yeah, I would think that, you know, they're going to make a move. I mean, I know Ben says he wants to come back, but mm-hmm. even if he does, man.
Josh Rosen.
There we go.
Hey,
Josh Rosen will be first.
Revived him again.
The truther status lives on.
Yes.
but the Steelers do realize that they've got to make a decision very soon about their quarterback position, because even if Roethlisberger comes back next year, his days are sort of limited, I mm-hmm. think, in the NFL. All right, tight ends. Top five, George Kittle, Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, Evan Ingram, Austin Hooper. First question, Kittle over Kelce, huh? I mean, I don't hate it. I don't hate it at all. Just the
it's an age thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kittle is what, 4 years younger than Kelce.
Yep.
And I feel, you know, like I talked about it in the preseason. I said I thought that Kittle numbers could regress a little bit, and they did. I mean, his touchdowns weren't great, and he had fewer yards, but he also got hurt. But the one thing that I feel like George Kittle proved is that he was not a fluke
right.
in 2018. He is a good player, an elite player at that position, and I'd rather have him than Kelce at this point. Why? Mm-hmm. 4 years younger, and he is that offensive centerpiece
right.
for San Francisco. Like, their backfield is an obvious headache for fantasy owners. And I think Deebo Samuel is going to take a next step next year. He could end up being, you know, we talk about the wide receivers in their second year sort of bust. Deebo could be that guy in 2020. But I really do feel like Kittle is the best dynasty tight end right now in fantasy.
100%. I mean, Kittle is going to probably rip off at least four or five straight top three seasons. And, and a few of those will be top, mm-hmm. you know, top one or two.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, still this year, what, 85 catches, over 1,000 yards. You're right. The touchdowns, only only five this year. I say only. But
well, he started the year really slow, too, because he had three touchdowns called back due to penalty, I think,
in the first
month of the season.
Right.
So his fantasy numbers could have looked a lot different had those touchdowns not gone away.
Mm-hmm. So, and you're right. He is the centerpiece of the offense. You know, I dare say he's sort of become the face of the team, I think. I know Jimmy Garoppolo, quarterbacks always kind of get that love, but I think George Kittle sort of more embodies what that 49er team is.
He's like the heartbeat of that team because he's a fun-loving guy. He's always out there having fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can argue that he's the face of the franchise more than Garoppolo is.
Yeah.
So I know you would never draft him here, but in redraft leagues, do you see him going off the board in the first round?
No.
In first, early second?
I could see maybe late second round.
That's where I think he'll go.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's where he's going to end up going. Marcus knows me. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I know. See, I mean, like I said, I know you would never do it there. I'm just curious where people are going to start to reach for him.
Mm-hmm.
You got Zach Ertz as tight end 6.
Yeah.
Out of the top five, huh? You got Austin Hooper just ahead of him, right?
Again, age. Ertz is 29. Mm-hmm. He saw decreases in targets, in catches, in yards, touchdowns, and fantasy points.
We were all over that.
In 2019.
Right.
Dallas Goedert has started to, you know, creep up. He's getting more opportunities, and I think he's only going to continue to get more opportunities.
Right.
In fact, I think if you can sell high on Zach Ertz in Dynasty right now, might not be a bad move.
I'm with you with that, on that 100%. I actually think Dallas Goedert's better than Zach Ertz. I think he provides more after the catch. Mm-hmm. Zach Ertz does not play on the line of scrimmage. He's typically flexed out. Goedert can play on the line of scrimmage. I think the Eagles are going to get Goedert a big role this coming year, and we all know the Eagles are going to be out looking for new pass catchers, and Zach Ertz's targets are only going
to
go down.
I wanted the Cowboys to get Goedert so bad in that draft.
Well, they almost did.
I know.
They almost did.
I know. I wanted Goedert so bad.
Goedert would have been perfect.
He would have been great in that offense. Yeah. The other part of it, too, is, and I don't remember who posted this, but you know, somebody had a chart of all the different personnel groupings that each team uses, and nobody uses 12 personnel. Nobody goes two tight ends more than the Eagles do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that means
yep.
Goedert is going to be on the field a lot.
Yeah.
A lot next mm-hmm. year as well.
Yep.
A tweet that we actually all got from James Jansen, and I felt like it sort of was fitting with this conversation since we were talking about Dynasty Leagues. He actually asked if we would talk a little bit about Keeper League. It's, you know, sort of different, but kind of the same. He said he's, I think, looking to start one and kind of wanted to get our thoughts and some advice about trying to get a Keeper League together, anything he should or should not do. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts or any quick tips for folks who are interested in, you know, doing something more than just a redraft league this season.
Sure. I think if you're going to start a keeper league, first thing you need to do is determine like how long you can actually keep the players. Because I think, you know, if you have like a keeper league where you get to keep your, let's say, top three players every year, there should be some sort of cliff where you can keep them for like 3 to 4 years. You shouldn't be able to keep them for the life,
forever,
for the lifetime of their mm-hmm. playing. I don't know. I always have a problem with that, though, at the same time, because you could slam dunk of a value like Lamar Jackson in the 9th or 10th round, and you would want to hold on to that guy. Another way to get around that is just to have like an escalating round. So like if you draft Lamar Jackson in the 9th round, the following year you would have to give up your 8th round pick to keep him. Mm-hmm. I think that's another fun way to play keeper is, you know, you could maybe, instead of having, you know, the windows where you can only keep players for a couple years, you can have, you know, some sort of sliding value where you have to give up a future pick to keep that player.
Yeah, I mean, I was in a keeper league for years and years and years where we had a rule where basically didn't matter where you drafted the guy, like anybody who was drafted outside of the 4th round, even if you picked them up off the waiver wire, if you kept them, he was going to cost you a 4th round pick.
Okay.
So the 1st and 2nd and 3rd rounders were going to cost you exactly that, and anybody past that was going to cost you a 4th rounder. So it made a little bit of a different strategy.
I like that.
You know, if you got Lamar Jackson in the, you know, 10th round and suddenly he's going to cost you a 4th round pick, I mean, you're still probably going to keep him, but it's not as easy as saying, oh, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th round pick, Lamar Jackson, he's locked and loaded. And I also like the situation that you had mentioned with like sort of contracts.
Yeah.
Now you can't,
love that.
You can't, in our league, it was 3 years. Mm-hmm. So basically you could try to draft the guy again, but he had to go back into the pool in that 4th year, he had to go back in the pool.
Contract leagues are a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I played in a contract league for a long time, and it unfortunately fell apart, but it was the same thing. Like it was literally just NFL-style cap space. You had so much cap space that you could spend on certain players, and Max contract was 3 years, and Larry Fitzgerald is always worth a 1 year deal.
You know, it's funny. I played in a league where anyone drafted after the ninth round was keeper eligible, which sort of made it interesting when you got to those middle rounds about, like, you know, guys that you thought were potential sleepers. And it's like, well, do I take the chance and wait a round or so on this guy to make him keeper eligible? Or do I go out and draft him thinking that he might not be on the board for me after the ninth round? And so, you know, those eighth, ninth round picks got really kind of tense a little bit with guys coming off the board. But, you know, if you landed a Lamar Jackson in the 11th round, you felt great because you did. You would also, you know, you'd lose your, you know, 10th, 11th round pick, whatever round it was. But you did get to keep him and you got yourself a sleeper. So I thought that was a kind of an interesting way to go about it as well. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Leagues are fun, man. It's also like you also have to determine how many players you can keep.
How many you can keep, right, exactly.
And that's why, like, when we get keeper league questions, it's like really hard unless you're very specific.
I think most keeper leagues are like 3 to 5 players. Mm-hmm.
Right,
that's
yes.
That's typically what it is.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there you go. James, hopefully that helps. Enjoy if you do get your keeper league started up. Definitely enjoy. And by the way, if you guys have questions during the offseason, we are certainly glad to get them. We will, you know, try to get to as many of them as we can, especially because it is slower now. So if you got the, you know, I guess procedural questions, if you will, or things like that, we're definitely down to talk about it. Want to end the show. Look, unless you have, you know, there was no way to avoid it yesterday. If you were near a television, a radio, a phone with the internet, you heard about the death of Kobe Bryant. Died. He, along with his daughter, 13-year-old daughter Gigi, and 7 other people died in a helicopter crash just outside of Los Angeles on Sunday morning. Look, obviously, it's not a football story, but it is big enough that it, you know, has kind of consumed everything and everyone, I think, for the last 24 hours and probably beyond. You know, it was. I was talking with one of my best friends last night about it, and we were both just sort of trying to wrap our heads around this thing, right? Because, guys, we couldn't think of another situation where you had an athlete still so young, you know, not far removed from, you know, a literally Hall of Fame, all-time great playing career, who just died so suddenly. I mean, we've had athletes die. We've had athletes die young. You know, a guy like Dale Earnhardt died at the Daytona 500. But, I mean, most of the time we came up with it, it was athletes who maybe had sort of regional appeal or appeal within their sport. You know, Pat Tillman was a guy who was well known within football circles, but didn't necessarily have the broad appeal. We couldn't think of anything on this level. The closest thing we could come up with was Magic Johnson announcing he had HIV. I mean, this just... I don't know. I feel like, guys, this is going to be one of those, like, you'll remember where you were when you found out the news that Kobe Bryant died.
I will. I had gotten a text from a friend of mine, and he had sent something on Twitter, and he was like, is this true? You know, because knowing that I live in Los Angeles. And I was walking with my girlfriend Matthew and Kylo down to Manhattan Beach to have lunch. And so I had no clue. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what's this? Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I go right to Twitter, and everything's blowing up. And I texted some of my friends, some of whom like knew Kobe Bryant and had casual relationships with him. And you know, they're like, there was a helicopter crash. There's I know people who live in that area where the crash actually happened. And then there was like a lot of there was all kinds of just crazy reports going on about who was on the helicopter,
right?
And you know who. The obviously Kobe Bryant was one of my basketball heroes. I mean, I grew up and you can make fun of me all you want. I grew up in Connecticut, but I was a Lakers fan. I was a Lakers fan ever since the finals against the Sixers, where Magic took over for Kareem, who was injured, and Magic played center and he went nuts. And I fell in love with the Lakers because of Magic Johnson. And so I remember where I was when the HIV announcement came out. But this is worse because Kobe lost his life, and what's worse to me is that his daughter, 13 years old, you know, also lost her life in this tragic accident. And so it's going to be something that I'm going to remember not only just as a sports fan, but I mean, just as a human being for the rest of my life, because it's such a tragedy, you know, when someone dies so young. I mean, and you know, I have, you know, I have Matthew, you know, Marcus, you know, as a dad, you at some point I'm sure will be. But the thing that just breaks my heart is thinking that helicopter's going down and Kobe knows it and his daughter is right there and there's nothing he can do to stop what's going to happen. And that is just the most heartbreaking part of this whole thing.
I think if anything, it's just a reminder to try to always live in the moment. I think when you're with your loved ones or with your friends, whomever it is, there's a lot of things in life that are completely out of our control. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as we think that we're in control, we're really not. There's a lot of randomness that takes place around us. And, you know, yesterday was just a really good example of it. I'm with you, though. I mean, I'm going to age myself here, but I grew up watching Kobe, like, all throughout the 2000s. I mean, he's one of my, definitely one of my idols, I think. In 2002, my dad took me to Charlotte Hornets Lakers game, and Kobe played just, like, absolute that entire game. Didn't make a shot, but he hit the game winner, and the whole arena just went completely nuts. It was a fadeaway two from, like, just impossible shot. He fell back on his butt, made the shot. Kobe had so many moments, just, you know, random Hornets regular season game is obviously just a one-off, but it was, like, one of those moments in your life where I'll never forget, like, you know, he played terrible that entire game, but he persevered and came back and won it for his team. There's so many moments in Kobe's career where he did something similar to that, and I think, you know, his just ultimate determination and his ultimate competitiveness is what will live on with him. Is he was just the ultimate athlete, and I'm still in shock.
And yeah, and if we learn anything from this too, is that just as human beings, is that, like, man, 5 minutes from now is not guaranteed for anybody. Exactly. So, you know, hug your loved ones, tell them that you love them. Someone who may be an adversary, hey, you know, let's smooth things over, man. Like, I mean, because literally, not, you know, every day is not is a blessing that you wake up on. You know, you just never know. It hurt. I grew up, you know, following Kobe and the great teams with Shaq and, you know, man,
those Shaq Kobe years.
That was just a great player. You know, all the, like, the arguments and the debates that you would have. You know, who's better, Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant? You know, he got to that level,
right?
As a player, he was that good.
But I also think, you know, those debates are futile. You know, it's just like Kobe.
I mean, it's fun fodder.
Yeah, it is, exactly.
At the same time, like, all, you know, MJ, Kobe, LeBron, all of these guys are legends, and what Kobe has left behind, the legacy he's left behind, is will forever endure.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie, I don't know if you had any thoughts you wanted to kind of jump in here with.
I'm similar to Graham in that, like, I remember my first basketball hero, non-Knicks hero, was Jordan, but Jordan was already playing, obviously, when I was born in 92, so Kobe was, like, the first guy that I was, I guess, cognizant enough where it's, like, I could grab the remote and put on a basketball game, and so I was, and basketball was my first love. It was the first sport I played. It was the first job I really had was in within the NBA, so, like, I've always had an attachment to the sport, and it just shows you, like, you know, last night was the Grammys, and there was a whole segment on Kobe and every single athlete across, you know, whether it's soccer players over in Europe or it's NFL guys or NHL guys, everyone's doing a tribute to Kobe. So it shows that he was just loved across all platforms, whether it was in sport or entertainment. And he was just a guy that was just the best competitor. He was the icon of at least this our generation, yeah. Graham, and think about all the great players the Lakers had. When you go back to Elgin Baylor and Jerry West, Kobe is probably the guy that shines the brightest, which is, you know, that speaks volumes. So it's something that's just obviously it's awful for not only him, his daughter, and then the other families and little girls that were with them going to their basketball game. It's miserable to read, but you know, he was really one of the all time greats. And I saw somebody tweet, like, you were not a great NBA player unless you were compared to Kobe Bryant. And, like, I think that's, like, the best way to describe him.
It's perfect. And I think, you know, all the young players that are, I mean, the NBA is just littered with so much young talent. It's such a good time to be an NBA fan.
Yeah.
But all of these guys were inspired by Kobe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's been amazing to me, not only the obviously NBA guys, but just, as Eddie said, across sport. I mean, it's to see, you know, Joe Burrow and Baker Mayfield, to see Neymar after he scores a goal, you know, throw up the 2-4 has been amazing. I will say, I really was trying, I spent a lot of time, I'm sure like a lot of people, just trying to wrap my head around this whole thing. I know near the end of his basketball career, as it was winding down, one of the things I always said and was always curious about was, what would Kobe's life after basketball be like? Because watching him play and watching his career, it just seemed like he was so singularly focused on basketball. And I always just kind of wondered, like, would he be lost without the sport? What would he be like? I mean, I always kind of joked that he would be like the, you know, bitter old guy that would show up to a YMCA and just start dominating games or whatever. And I think part of what has hit me so hard about this is seeing how he has really flourished after his basketball life, and sort of, I think, understanding what you know, the quote-unquote Mamba mentality was. I think we've shorthanded it now to just to say shoot your shot. But I feel like his post-basketball life really was a lot like his game on the court. I mean, Graham, you talked about that game you saw him play where he didn't play well, but he kept shooting. And if there was always a criticism of Kobe's game, it's that he never met a shot he didn't like, but he kind of kept going the whole time. And I felt like after basketball, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he dabbled in music even during his career. I think he like had a record label and he had a couple of rappers, but Kobe won an Oscar, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, he got into, you know, production, television, movie production. He wrote the scripts for the commercials he was in. He really branched out with the idea of whatever he was going to do, he was going to learn how to be great at it. And, you know, you talk about not having anything promised for you in terms of time and tomorrow and anything like that. And I think, to me, it's just a reminder of, you know, whatever you want to call it, have the Mamba mentality, shoot your shot, go do what it is. Do that thing that you've always wanted to do, because, you know, you just don't know if that's going to come around again at any point.
Kobe is like, definitely not the first athlete, but he's one of the athletes at the forefront of putting hard work first over the glamour and fame. Mm-hmm. I mean, the dude in 1997, they're playing the Jazz, game five, four straight air balls.
Yep,
four straight air balls.
Oh, I remember.
Basically, kick off his career.
Yep.
And he came back, and I mean, I think that moment in that game, in that limelight, that failure motivated him.
Absolutely.
And pushed him throughout his career. And I think that's really the lasting memory of Kobe, is just that hard work and your determination of what you put into something is what eventually you'll get out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's just, look, the athlete, the man that he was, you know, is so varied and so wide. Even in, you know, look, I'm 42 years old, right? He was 41 in a relatively short time on this earth, able to kind of do so much and touch so many people. I don't think there's any way we can encompass it in our, you know, the 10 minutes we have here. And, you know, we will, I'm sure, see and read remembrances of him for days and weeks to come. You know, all our thoughts and prayers to his family, his, you know, friends, teammates, competitors, all the people who knew him, certainly on a level that most of us were never going to get to. But just a horrible, horrible thing. And I think everybody, especially the city of Los Angeles, just still completely in shock for it. So there you go. That's it. Wrapping it up. We are done. We appreciate you downloading and listening. As always, you know the drill. Tell two friends, rate, review, and remember, love the people God gave you, because one day he's going to take them back. We'll see you on Wednesday.